3-0, entity of 212, complex.
DPS, go. Inco, go. PUS, go. Surgeon, go. Booster, go. Copy that, we have a go from you guys.
This is Talking Sound.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the Talking Sound Podcast, the only podcast on the internet where negative 10 is a number to be desired. Coming at you live from the throbbing heart of rock and roll that is Austin, Texas, I am Chris Jordan, your host. Today on the Talking Sound Podcast, we have a very good and long friend of mine, Mr. Tom Metz. How you doing, Tom?
Hey, Chris. What's up, man?
Oh, doing pretty good, man. Been doing all right. How have you been?
Doing good, man. Doing good. Just, you know, playing out, teaching gig guitar, you know, rocking out.
Heck yeah, as always. And well, just to give you a little backstory, a little backstory between Tom and I. We've actually known each other for, is it 6 years now?
Oh, geez.
Close to? Six, seven years?
Since Daddy's Junkie Music.
Absolutely. I was a regular. For those of you who have been listening to the show and follow me on Austin Hot Mods, I am a gear junkie and fanatic. I have a raging issue. I'm trying to find meetings. They don't exist yet. But yeah, man, I got problems.
Well, he definitely cleaned us out in the store, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. There are a few pieces over here, actually. My Effectrons in the rack over there. One of those is from Daddy's, which was hard because there was actually a guy who would contact all the Daddy's and ask them to hold the Effectrons for him. So it was tough. You really had to be in the know to be able to get one from there. It was great.
I definitely sold you a lot of those.
You did, man. And it was fantastic. It was always fun every time I went in there. It was kind of sad to me, actually, whenever the place closed, even though I wasn't in Maine anymore. Because I knew so many people who literally intrinsically depended on that place.
Oh, yeah. When that place went under, it was sad for everybody, I will say.
Yeah, most definitely. But on a happier note, I mean, you know, we also worked together on a live recording for your jazz band, Metz and Co.
Jazz Quartet. I got some really great recordings from you there.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I actually still use those to this day in corporate events, and people ask me who they are. And what's great is that I see them trying to Shazam it.
Oh.
I see them trying to use their app to...
Maybe
who
it's not
is this?
That big yet.
It didn't pop it up. I'm like, oh, it probably might. Yeah, like, it probably might not, like, some of them might be close enough to the original piece that they might pop up just as a general, like, you know, this piece is by John Coltrane.
Yeah, you know, I wonder about that, actually.
But y'all did some really unique stuff in Metz & Co., because, I mean, my favorite part, of course, other than your guitar playing, was the lead harmonicist. He was just
Jason Curran, yeah,
phenomenal,
great harmonica player. He played a diatonic harp,
yeah,
and played bebop lines and that thing,
which is a skill in and of itself. I mean, I blow a little blues harp here and there. I'm not fantastic.
Yeah, but, I don't know how he did that.
It was like somebody singing. It really was. It was so vocal and so expressive. It was an amazing, amazing show whenever I saw y'all play.
Glad you got some recordings of that.
Absolutely. I'm glad that you got the recordings of it, honestly. Because, I mean, you know as well as anybody, bands, projects spring up, projects go away, man. And sometimes there are those little nuggets of gold that... If for anything you want recorded for posterity's sake, and if I'm not mistaken, I think that's how I sold the recording to you.
That's true. I mean, yeah, I don't really talk to those guys much anymore. Alex isn't. I don't think he even plays drums anymore.
Really?
But you know, Kim's in Denver. You know, of course, I'm here in Austin now.
Sure. Well, but you have family in the Denver area, though. Isn't that
right?
I do
have a cousin over there now.
We actually recently talked about the possible move to Denver for you eventually.
Right now, I feel like I'm on the 5-year plan here in Austin, but
I could see that. Well, and let's talk a little bit about that, because you are truly one of, I consider at least, an Austin music success story. I mean, you are you are an embodiment of why people move to Austin. And tell us a little bit about that journey and how you came to be here.
Well, basically, you know, things weren't going so well in Maine. You know, my band Hobo, we sort of, we were on our last legs. We ended up, you know, dispersing. And so I had no music projects going on there. And, you know, I was like, you know, Maine's cold. I don't want to live here anymore. I was like, I think I'm going to move out of here. So, yeah, I just, me and my buddy Corey, we got into my, you know, my Ford Taurus wagon, loaded it up with all of our worldly possessions. And basically, we're like, all right, let's get out of here. So we ended up, you know, driving over to Michigan and New Orleans and all, you know, all these places. And anyway, I was on my way to California. And, you know, lo and behold, I'm driving through Austin. I give you a call and, hey, can I crash on your couch for, you know, a couple days, you know?
Yeah, I think you were actually in Houston at the time, if I remember correctly. Yeah, you had been.
Well, I called you from Houston.
Yeah, you were on couchsurfing.com, and you're like, hey, aren't you in Houston? I'm like, well, I actually moved to Austin to get engaged about 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was like, you were like, hey, I'm coming to Austin tomorrow. I'm like, shoot, man.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. And so lo and behold, I give you a call. You let me crash on your couch, and you know, one thing led to another. I'm starting to, you know, start to rehearse with these Austin musicians. One of them was Jeremiah Houston. You know, I try out with him. I didn't get into that. I'm not really much of a country player, but
no. But I remember you practicing the licks, buddy.
Yeah, and you, that's true.
It's knowing the styles that you were familiar with, and that I've seen you play. You know, jazz, surf rock, you know, punk, metal, like. Dude, you took to that like a duck to water, man. Like, you were doing pretty good.
Yeah, you know, so I learned a few things here and there, and ended up getting in touch with this band, Cats Melvin. Great band. They're actually out of Lincoln, Nebraska, but for some reason they want an Austin musician, and okay, I'm in Austin, sure. So
I answered the ad on Austin Craigslist.
I answered the ad
in Austin.
It ended up getting a gig, going on tour, like, and you know, the Pacific Northwest is in Idaho, playing this dude's songs, you know, Idaho, Washington, you know, basically like that area.
Yeah.
Could come back here. I was like, you know, it was kind of like one of those things where, okay, I could go back to Austin and see what's up, or I could, yeah, maybe I'll go to Colorado and continue my journey west. Mm-hmm. Ended up getting a call from, you know, this dude, he wanted to put together an 80s new wave band, new wave to tribute band. And, it's like, shit, all right, I'll do that.
Right.
So anyway, he has all these gigs lined up, and it's like, all right, I guess I'll do that for a while. And so the band's called Safety Patrol, and we were, you know, white, you know, all white with like a orange reflector belt, and basically, yeah, we've been playing like every weekend for like the past like year and a half.
Yeah,
so y'all have been, it's been working out pretty good, man.
Well, and that's what I love about it is that, like I said, you are, before we started the interview, you are an example of the true Austin success story. Yeah. You're, and you know, they're few and far between, and the one thing that people fail to, I guess, factor into those success stories is the true amount of hard work put into it.
Yeah, I mean, from my experience, what I've seen around this area is, you know, a lot of, like, singer-songwriters, a lot of people that, you know, they can play their instrument, and they can sing okay, but, you know, a lot of it is, you know, they can't sight-read, they don't have, you know, a knowledge of, you know, classical music or jazz music. Yep. And
which those are the money gigs, man.
Yeah, well,
we have that conversation privately all the time. You know?
I mean, I've noticed, like, just having the skills, like the university education, ended up being really beneficial for me here.
Yeah.
You know, in Maine, you know, everybody and their mom had a degree in gig guitar performance.
Yeah, yeah, but, exactly.
You know, and trying to play up there with that.
It's like going to California and not studying film for at least a semester.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
but you know, with that said, I mean, you know, it's I had a unique skill set, I would say. I mean, not,
you do.
Not necessarily better than a lot of the musicians here, because there's a lot of talent in Austin.
There's a huge talent pool in Austin.
Huge talent pool.
And quite honestly, though, one of the only other places that I've ever been and worked that has an equivalent talent pool is Portland, Maine.
Really?
I used to tell people all the time, it is Austin, Texas with an ocean view.
And a far less lucrative economy.
Well, yeah. I mean, hey, it's just expensive living up there, you know?
It is, yeah.
I mean, heating oil is crazy expensive, and finding somewhere with an electric heater inside of it, just, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, it's been nice here because, you know, there are venues here that will support the scene.
There are. And, well, and what I find exists more here than up there, and like I said, we talk about this privately all the time, is the quick, easy gig. The gig where you can come in and say, hey, me and my buddy will come in and play guitar for 3 hours. And if you can feed us, give us a $25 bar tab and $100, done.
Yeah, you know. And
all day long, man. You can book 5 days a week like that in Austin or even Houston if you have a decent enough act and you play literally music that people want to hear.
Exactly, like, yeah. I mean, me and my singer from Safety Patrol, we've got a project. We call ourselves the Jailbirds.
Nice.
Yeah,
I love the name. We talked about the project, but we didn't talk about the name.
Yeah,
that's a nice on-air drop.
Yeah,
I like that.
The Jailbirds. Come see us Monday at the Bat Bar on February 9th.
Oh, there you go.
So, so we got a little thing going. You know, we're basically doing like covers, you know. We also do a few of our originals, you know, we got some of our songs in there. But.
Well, and tell me about that, because I love the concept. Something that I've always loved about you, Tom, is the fact that you do see both sides of the coin. Because Hobo, I mean, I worked with the lead instrument from Hobo quite a few times before you joined. He had numerous incarnations of Hobo.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime he came to my club, the Ale House in Portland, Maine.
Oh yeah.
He always, like, it was him and a drummer and like three other dudes, like, consistently.
He was always different guys.
Until you and Bob came around. And once y'all came around, there really solidified, I thought, at least a base. Something that he consistently could bounce off of.
Oh yeah. Well, Hobo was an interesting project.
It was. And it was one of those that I saw as, you know, hey, not everybody's a Rush fan. You find most of the people that are Rush fans are music or technical geeks.
Hmm.
One of the two.
Yeah. Certainly what I brought to Hobo was a lot of that. You know, I had, you know, the mindset to make it really intricate. You know, I threw a lot of my scalar knowledge, jazz knowledge.
Hey, you know, it's called, for those of you who are not aware, please hop online, look it up. Albums are for sale. You can buy CDs, all kinds of stuff. Hobo, Hoboe.
Yeah.
Just Google Hobo. And Ben Micklejohn is the man who plays the lead instrument, which I challenge you to find a progressive rock and roll band with an oboe as the lead instrument, with an oboe as the lead instrument.
Yep.
That's what I loved about it, was an affected oboe. And it was, I mean, you know my history. I was a jam band guy. And the places that it went, the things that y'all did live on stage, the experimentation that happened.
Oh, yeah, it was always a show. Yeah,
it was great, man.
I mean, we weren't necessarily a jam band, but we
y'all were definitely not a jam. I mean, I remember I put y'all in a show with, it was not Stars Look Down. It was Project 7, which was very progressive rock.
Oh, yeah, my buddy Nick McIntyre.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, his album for Awesome Kong just got done being mastered.
Oh, nice.
They're getting ready to release it. He's going to be on the show. Mm-hmm. I gave him a hard time on Facebook today about that, and then texted him. He liked my comment, I texted him right after. I was like, I see you liked my comment. That means you're on at work. So come on my show and get people to sell things at Guitar Center. I'll talk to you soon. So
it's funny to think now that I'm teaching there now over at Guitar Center.
And how's that working out, by the way?
Great. Yeah, I just ended up getting the gig. I met a for a friend of mine. Her name's Amanda, but you know, we started to talk, and she's talking, oh yeah, we need, you know, teachers at Guitar Center.
Yep.
And she came and saw my band and was like, oh well, shit, you want to teach? You know, I'm like, yeah, hell yeah, like that's exactly what I want to do. So, well, with that, I'm officially doing music full time.
Well, and that's great. That's what I love. It's a little bit mind numbing. I mean, mind blowing doesn't even explain it to people. Like, you know, people ask me all the time, like, what's it like being self employed? And number one, it's it's not easy.
Well, no,
you've got to be a little neurotic to do it.
Yeah,
you know, because you really do have to be the bear for details, and you kind of have to be that control freak a little bit.
Sure. Well, I mean, it definitely takes a certain amount of neurotic's a good term for it.
It is.
You know, I'm always checking my scheduling.
Well, man, it's
checking to see like when my free time is. And
well,
you know,
it's one foot on the ground and the other in straight stir crazy. Is what it is. Like literally, it gets hectic.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, I'm always hustling to try to get gigs.
Well, I know,
booked and all that stuff.
I know. I just posted episode 15 today. And as much as we talk and everything else, this is the first time I've been able to get you in the studio and get one done. Not that you haven't been here, but like it's always been like, oh,
sure.
Well, we'll wait for so-and-so to get. And then they don't show up. And then it's like, oh, well,
yeah,
some of them are gone. We didn't get one recorded today. Yeah. Oh, well. But I mean, I have wanted to have you on because you are a continuously working musician.
That's what it takes, man.
And,
like,
well,
if you want to make it in the music business, you need to be always, you know, working or doing stuff.
Well, and not just that, playing in and of itself, practicing. My upright bassist used to say it the best, and I love that guy. I love him so much, Mike. He's just an amazing individual and been playing for God knows how long, since he was a teenager, and schooled classically in music, and he would just like you get on me all the time, like, that's not the chord that is. And I'm like, I know that.
Yeah.
That's the chord I have, and that's the chord I know, so that's what I'm
right?
playing.
Tell you, man, I'm always getting on my musicians about that stuff. Like, no, you listen to it? No, it's different than that. But, you know, oftentimes you read one thing,
yeah,
and it's always something else.
My favorite phrase from Mike was always, you don't have to pay us for tonight, but you do have to pay us for all the practice.
That's
what it boils down to.
Yeah.
Is that for that 30, for example, with you and your singer from Safety Patrol doing the solo stuff together, a 3-hour show. You know,
yeah,
even 2.5, even 2 hours, you know, some,
yeah,
like,
man,
45 minutes
we're
some breaks.
We're lucky enough where we have been playing together for, you know, over 2 years, like probably almost 3 years now, actually.
Yeah.
So we already have a pretty solid repertoire of songs.
Well, and you're
just a matter of, you know, diversifying a little bit.
Well, and the synergy to begin with. I mean, you can already kind of read each other's language on stage.
Mm-hmm.
That's really a big hurdle that people don't realize is, hey, this guy may be phenomenal. He may not jibe with my drummer and bassist at all.
Hmm.
You know?
Well.
And that's why I've always been a big fan of the duo trio action, something like that, because it is much less to try to solidify as far as that goes. You know, it's much easier to figure out the mathematics of, hey, let's all choose 5 songs, bring them to the table, and see which ones are the best.
Sure, yeah.
You're
going to
figure that a lot easier with 3 people than 5.
I know what that's like. Well, it's like that even with Safety Patrol. You know, we'll try certain songs, and, you know, some songs just, like, you know, it's not that we don't know the songs or, like, we can't play them. It's just, like, the energy that comes out when we play those particular songs. If you don't enjoy it, for instance,
it's not gonna
be good. You know, we want to play songs we love playing.
That's it.
You know,
it translates through the microphone
immediately.
Immediately.
And I feel like that's been part of our success, too. the safety patrol successes that we all love playing.
Well, and that's...
We love what we're playing.
I've seen y'all a good two or three times live, and I can say that that is what I see translated from stage. Every time I see it, it is the fact that it wouldn't matter if nobody was there. It wouldn't matter if the sound guy wasn't there and y'all had no microphones on.
Yeah,
you would still be jamming and just rocking that business out. And,
you know, if... You know, my drummer Sam in that band, he said it best when he was like, you know, like, if you don't enjoy what you're doing, you can't really be playing music for money.
No, because... you can't. And that's what broke my heart, and what breaks my heart consistently the most is the dream. The dream is what breaks
my heart.
The dream
to make it big, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's not that it isn't there. Hey.
It happens from time
to time. Your chances of winning the lottery if you buy a ticket consistently are there. I was literally hanging out with some dudes the other night, a band that I've been trying to get on the show. They were talking about a guy that used to be in their band whose dad just won the lottery. Been playing consistently every week for 10 years. And I was like, they're like, wow, you know, to play consistently every week for 10 years. I was like, here's the thing. I got family that plays the lottery, all right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, I got family that plays the lottery. I got family that just gambles. Like, that's what they do. They're retired people, and they just go to the boats in Louisiana every month. And that, like, they literally have to report an income from gambling because they make so much money from gambling.
Damn.
Like, they're good at cards, man.
I don't know how to do that.
You know, but... I got a couple uncles that they good at it. And here's your money to go play the slots while I'm playing cards. And I'm going to play some cards. But, yeah, I mean, I was like, if you do the math, over 10 years, you know, he spent like $15,000 to win $1.5 million.
Well, if you can do that. I mean,
like, that's, I don't know, that's some pretty good return on investment in my eyes.
I think so, too. Well, you know, I've never been a gambling man, I tell you that much.
No, but I mean, it's just the fact of... That those are just about your odds of landing that big contract, getting to be the Super Bowl performer. You know, those are just about your odds. You could be struck by lightning just as fast or win the lottery just as fast. The question is, much like your drummer put it, what is your measure of happiness?
Yeah, for sure. And
if you want to make a living playing music, buddy, that's easy. That's easy. You just gotta
sell out, for one.
I wouldn't necessarily call it selling out, you know? I mean, one of my favorite quotes is Metallica. Yeah, we sold out, and we sell out every night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people think that they went soft.
Good. That's good for them.
I mean, before we went on air, what was I saying? You people make millions of dollars, and what, you can't get a little bit of help? You know, they got some help, they quit the drinking, they quit the drugging, and lo and behold, they still love playing music, and they still love playing music together. Mm-hmm. It may be a little bit different, but they're still selling out stadiums.
Yeah, it seems like there's been a resurgence of big bands.
There has been, man. As far as the Monster Band goes, absolutely. It is it is back, and it's huge.
Yeah, like huge. Soundgarden's playing again.
Yeah.
Some other bands? You got Alice in Chains. They got a new singer. STP just fired, you know, Scott Whelan. You know, like, I mean, what's up with that? You know,
it's troubled.
You know, they're all big musicians. You know, but you know, they're all doing their thing. You know,
well, and they're all doing the musician and the rock and roll thing. And sometimes, you know, it literally took me getting a business card to not drink at shows that I work. The day I walked in and I gave a club owner my business card, I stopped getting drunk in clubs.
Well, yeah, you don't want to cause a scene. I mean, that's...
That's even whenever I was just in the club. Whether I was working or not, I'd given that dude a business card. If I come back into his club, I don't want to be the drunken fool.
No.
I may come in, I'll give him 10, 20 bucks on some beers, I'll put money in his pocket, I will be part of what you're trying to build, but I'm not going to be your liability.
Nah, hell no.
And that's how I always looked at it.
That's another mantra that I feel like it's another part of the success of, you know, Safety Patrol is that, you know, we don't get wasted.
You don't. Y'all have a good, honest, clean, good time on stage. And like a lot of bands, even locally, you actually play all the songs. There are no backing tracks.
Oh, yeah.
There are no triggered tracks or anything like that.
Yeah, I'm... I'm fundamentally against backing tracks anyway.
Yeah.
And you know that's sort of what our band's about. You know, we want it to be real. We don't want a karaoke band up there. And there has been sort of a insurgence of.
There's been a large insurgence of that. A large insurgence.
And, you know, I understand people are trying to make money. That's fine. That's great. You know, you give musicians a chance to play. Sometimes you're gonna get involved in a band that has, you know, backing tracks just to beef up the sound or whatever. But
when it's two thirds of the sound,
yeah,
I got a little issue.
Yeah, I mean, it's sad to me that, you know, it's sort of resorted to that. I mean, I personally will never do that because. Yeah.
Well, and granted, we've talked about building you a sample rig, things like that, to throw little bits of pepper and spice into the mix.
Well, they're throwing a sample is whatever.
Two totally like, different. Now, and hey,
look at hip-hop artists. You know, they're playing all...
Even me. You know, even samples. Me. I'm an electronic artist. And people have asked me for years to come out and do stuff. And the only way I can do it is to perform to a backing track.
Well?
That's the only way I can do it. Because otherwise, I'm... playing guitar, keyboards, synthesizers, yeah. All kind of, you know.
Well, I mean, there's also
air synths. Everything.
Oh, what you do is very, very different than what I do. I mean, I'm absolutely. You know, I'm in a live band kind of setting. You do more of like electronica studio kind of thing.
I do a little bit more textural live electronica. Yeah. So the two milieus are different.
Sure. Yeah.
Most definitely.
There's definitely some differences for sure.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But when you go see a band like playing Come On Eileen, and they have, you know, a piano in the background, like vocals in the background, they got a banjo. Like those aren't on stage.
There's a mandolin line playing that.
Yeah, like lead lines. That, you know, like, okay, like the lead guitar player is like, doesn't even have to play the song. He's just kind of dancing on stage while all these tracks are going on. Like, what are you doing? Like, play something, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, when we play Come On Eileen, I'm playing the violin parts, you know?
And dancing. dancing.
Well, you know, I got to make it look well, it.
Yeah, but that's, hey, man.
Hey, at least I'm dancing but playing.
That's it. That's what I'm saying. Is that you are, it's walking, chewing bubble gum, and singing at the same time is what you're doing up
on stage. Well, I mean, the whole the dancing thing, I look at it like, you know, my parts are going to come first and foremost.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been playing for 18 years. Yeah. I mean, I can play some of these parts.
If you like, can't skittle, and, if you, you can't know, skittle like, your feet and...
Yeah, I mean, it's whatever, you know.
Do a 1-3-5. Yeah. You may have a little problem.
Yeah. Well, I've been doing this job for long enough where, I mean, classical guitar... I need to be really still to play that.
Yes. Well, even a while ago, you know, we did some tracking before we did this, and totally different than what you normally play, you know. But I love it, because you've done some things for Austin Hot Mods and stuff like that, and you are really a stretched player, and that's why I wanted to have you on. So, but before we leave, please, one more time, the show that you have coming up.
Oh, yeah, the Jailbirds. Playing at the Bat Bar,
okay,
right off of 6th Street, February 9th, from 7 to 10.
All right.
It's me and Louis Torta. Louis Torta's the lead singer. He also is playing guitar with me. We're just doing a little duo thing.
Fantastic.
Rock it out.
Fantastic. Yeah. And they can find you at which guitar center here in Austin for lessons?
Well, I'm actually working at the Guitar Center up in Round Rock.
Okay, Guitar Center Round Rock.
It's a Guitar Center Studios in Round Rock, for the Hester's Boulevard or Hester's Crossing, I believe, is what it's called.
Fantastic. Well, once again, everybody, Thomas Metz, guitarist extraordinaire and guitar instructor. Thank you so much for being on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Chris.
While you're online checking those out, everybody, please stop off and check us out at www.talkingsoundshow.com. There you can get all of the technical articles, all of the new releases in the market, all of the new fun toys that are coming out. You can also download any episodes of the podcast in audio format. You can also check out our YouTube links. Go to YouTube and search Talking Sound Show, podcast, and you will definitely find our videos there. Awesome, awesome insight into what actually happens inside the studio with us. You can see all of the technical stuff and everything else. You can also find us on SoundCloud/Talking Sound and Spreaker.com/Talking Sound Podcast. Once again, everybody, I am your host, Christopher Jordan. This has been Thomas Metz, guitarist and guitar instructor. And until next time, everybody, keep reaching for 11. We'll talk to you soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
This is Talking Sound.